I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
And thank you all so very much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, chilling like a villain with me, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, here. I am here in quarantine. Everybody at my house is sick. So I'm trying to avoid the flu. Luke's been out of school because of the flu. Now my wife's got it.
Yeah.
The boys have gotten it.
The granddaughter's still good?
Granddaughter's better. Yeah,
good.
She's fine.
Good.
She never got the flu. I just think she had like a cold.
Yeah.
No, typical kid stuff. But I've somehow come out unscathed
because
so far.
Nothing wants to live in your body.
That's true. But I have not escaped the mountain cedar or the pine or the pollen or whatever else has been blown. Yeah. Every day I get up, there's literally a film on my car.
Looks like dust. Well, I told you when I was in the deer stand, bumping cedar limbs and it just puff, come out like dust. I'm like, somebody's going to die.
Please.
That's the one thing that doesn't get to me. Is the mountain cedar. But when you start getting into like there's another kind of pollen or something, probably the stuff off, like I always laughed about, off of broom weeds. That's the stuff that wears me out.
How about when there's like desert sand from the Sahara Desert that blows over? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. See, I like to think it comes from West Texas.
Well, I'm going
to
say I never remember that as a kid. How does it get all the way over here?
Strong winds.
Yeah.
Strong winds. Yeah, right. Man, how come it never blows good things? Why do I always got to get the dust?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
I'm going to blow something good back over this away. Folks, hope y'all are having a great week. Hope y'all have had good days. We're on the backside after the first of the year. We're still, look, it's been nice weather. It's finally gotten cold here. Kyle and I are digging that. Actually, cold. I'm going to have to run my fireplace. I'm going to fire that bad boy up. But, hey, look, we've been staying out of trouble.
I'm getting back in the swing of things. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm glad I love the holidays. I'm glad it's over, though, because I wake up every day and I don't even know what day it is.
It throws your timing off, right? Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Especially as you get older. Y'all know, everybody gets set in your ways and all of a sudden it's all thrown to the side. You don't know what's going on. You can't get anything going in your direction. But I tell you what you do have. You do have safety from vicious dog man attacks.
Oh, that's good.
That's a good thing. Some people don't. Let me lay this on you. All right. Lon fired this over here. Love Lon. This is something this is an unsettling story. I think you'll enjoy it. It says, hello. I grew up in southern Ohio near the Ohio River. Lucky, I bet there's some good fishing, right?
Yeah, I bet
and
so.
Like many local teenagers, my friends and I occasionally crossed into Maysville, Kentucky to explore the abandoned Hayeswood Hospital. That sounds terrifying.
It does sound terrifying.
Why did we do that as kids? Why does everyone, we'd always sneak into like abandoned buildings and all. Not until you get older, you realize like, yeah, bad things probably could have gone down there. We didn't know. You're just going in there anyway. And you got to imagine.
Because it's scary and it's fun. You're not supposed to be doing
remember
it.
Remember the flashlights we had back in the day? Like a plastic box that held like the big square lantern type batteries and a weak bulb that you could, you'd be better off with tin foil and a candle.
Mine's got 10 lumens.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm screaming. Now I got some crazy rechargeable one from my brother-in-law. Literally spent $5 on it. Put it in my stocking for Christmas.
Yeah.
Burn your eyeball out.
Isn't that crazy?
It's insane.
Have you seen the one where you can adjust the lens and you could start fires with it? Like, for real, for real.
No, but I think I need one of those.
It's like a survivalist flashlight.
I think we need to do that.
It's got a focusing, like, convex looking.
It'll probably come on in my backpack.
Start burning yourself.
Yeah. The bag's on fire, running around. So, okay. Back to the Hazelwood Hospital. It was a condemned structure backed by a steep hill and dense forest. Known locally as the place where kids went to scare the hell out of each other, I'd been inside the hospital at least 20 times before and knew the layout well. This sounds like somebody talking about the hotel over Mineral Wells, right? The Baker. Back in the day, the Baker used to be scary.
Still is.
Yeah, well, now it's getting a lot nicer, but when we were younger, you'd slip over, and that's when people didn't really care if you snuck into it. It was a lot scarier.
Did they stop renovation on that thing? Because they were, like, 2020, they were starting to
I think they're still working on it. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's already open in parts of it because William Clark Green had a concert in it.
Really?
Because that's one of his albums. Is called The Baker Hotel. And he had, like, in the bottom part where they had, like, the dance area and all. I think that's where it's at the base before you go upstairs and do all that. But I believe they're going to turn it back into what it was and a spa resort type thing. If so, dude, I'm there.
That's cool.
It's so cool. So, on this particular night, three of us arrived and immediately sensed that something was wrong. It was not just the awareness that we were trespassing, but there was a heavy feeling of danger that I'd never experienced there before. There was no other cars parked nearby, which meant that we were alone. So, after about 45 minutes inside, we all decided to split up to explore different areas. Never split the party, folks. So I headed to the basement morgue to take photos and see if I could capture anything unusual. After about 10 minutes in the morgue, I was hit by the worst smell I've ever encountered. It was the unmistakable odor of rot. I could not identify exactly what was decomposing, but it smelled like a large mass of decaying meat. As I tried to process this, I heard a steel door slam and the sound of something moving through standing water. The basement floor was flooded with several inches of water, so whatever it was had to be down here with me. Assuming my friends were trying to scare me, I decided to hide and scare them back. I climbed on top of one of the old body coolers and waited. Less than a minute later, I heard screaming. This was not playful or exaggerated screaming, but pure terror. I had known my friends for nearly 20 years and had never heard anything like it. The screaming stopped abruptly, followed by heavy running footsteps and loud pounding above me. At that moment, a sense of dread set in. After several minutes of silence, I heard panting and footsteps in the water moving closer. The smell of wet dog filled the air, mixed with the same overwhelming stench of decay. Another steel door slammed, closer this time. The breathing was labored and deliberate, accompanied by sniffing sounds. That's Kyle going into the kitchen in the wee hours of the morning. I know there's cookies in here. I think I smell brownies.
Yeah, I smell something brown chocolate.
I know there's brown chocolate in here. I slowly backed away toward the end of the cooler so I could drop into the boiler room right behind it. Before I could move far, the morgue door exploded open, cracking tiles as the handle slammed into the wall. The growl that followed was unlike anything I had ever heard. It was deep, rough, and powerful beyond comprehension. Whatever this was, it was tracking me by scent. I dropped into the boiler room and initially felt relief when I saw the connecting door was blocked by overturned gurneys and lockers. Well, that relief vanished when the pounding and scratching began. The sound of claws scraping steel was violent and relentless. Then it howled. The sound was so loud and forceful I had to cover my ears. I ran towards the loading dock area and caught a glimpse through the damaged doorway of an arm forcing its way inside. It was covered in gray and brown fur. The arm looked vaguely human, but the hand, well, the hand was completely wrong. It had five digits, each ending in massive claws capable of tearing through metal.
Hit it with something.
Dude, smack it. Take a finger. The dock doors would not open, so I smashed a window instead, shredding my hand as I climbed through. As I hit the ground outside, I turned and saw the creature standing in the doorway. Now, I'm 6'4", and I weigh about 250 pounds. This thing completely filled an 8-foot doorway. It was covered head to toe in gray-brown fur with a narrow snout resembling that of a Doberman pincer. Its ears were upright and canine, and it stared directly at me. And I was frozen, just froze there. That is, until it snarled. When it snarled, I broke. I ran towards the woods, then doubled back to the fire escape ladder when I realized I would not reach the car. As I climbed, the creature slammed into the ladder, knocking me down several rungs. It had leaped onto the fire escape and clawed at my feet. Just as I reached a first floor window, it grabbed my leg above the ankle and yanked. The pain was indescribable. My boots, jeans, and flesh were shredded. I pulled myself.
Now you're a werewolf.
Exactly. That got you, bro. Did you fail your save? Now you're a werewolf. Lycanthropy. Good job. I pulled myself through the window and I heard it retreat. Bleeding heavily, I dragged myself towards the main entrance. Steel doors slammed again. The howling returned. As I reached the exit, I looked back and saw the creature charging on all fours. I ran downhill towards the street and realized the car was gone. My friends had fled. I kept running until I reached a nearby house and collapsed inside after pounding on the door. An elderly woman let me in just as the creature stood upright at the end of her driveway. Police and EMTs arrived. Tests showed no drugs or alcohol in my system. I received 36 stitches in my leg and 17 in my hand, along with rabies shots. Authorities labeled it as a wild dog attack, but no one could explain the claw marks. I know what hunted me that night, and I've never returned to that hospital. That encounter has changed me permanently and taught me that we are not always on top of the food chain. Charles.
Yeah, Charles. You're a werewolf now.
You're a werewolf now, bro.
Not only would I not go back to the hospital, I wouldn't go back to Kentucky.
Yeah, that's one of the... Look, we've had several over all these years of these encounters with dog men, and they all get like, everybody senses like fear, right? You get that dread, fear. Yeah. And I don't remember one where it actually grabbed someone, where it actually tore into them.
I don't remember
like
that.
Specifically running them down. I mean, what could it have been? I mean, this guy's obviously, look, 6'4", 250, that's a big chunk of dude, right? I mean, that's a big chunk of dude. And this thing made him terrified enough to run, and he couldn't get away from it. I'd have to have a talk with my friends, too, about, hey, have y'all ever heard the no man left behind thing?
Yeah, right.
How about that, dude? Like, either we all get out or we all die. You don't leave your friends back there. We made that mistake lots of times. We should have left each other and other friends behind, but we never did. And so we would all get in trouble for things. But yeah, I would have to be like, so why did y'all just leave
me for dead? Like the scar I have over my eye for
that's
throwing rocks at a highway patrolman.
That running through the dark.
Yeah.
And there's a barbed wire fence in the dark. And trust me, barbed wire fences hide well in the dark.
Well,
how many stitches was that?
Like 15.
It wasn't terrible.
No.
Could have been worse. If it was a half an inch lower, you'd have had the patch.
Yeah, I'd have been blind.
Which, dude, it would have looked cool. I mean, your depth perception would have been ass. Hockey wouldn't have been that much fun. But, boy, it'd have looked cool.
Yeah. All the hits from the left side, boy, you would not see them coming. I got a pretty cool story here.
All right.
This was sent to us from a guy named Gary up in Canada. I want you to listen to this.
All right.
Let's listen.
Hi there. My name is Gary D, and I'm located up in Ontario, Canada. When I think back on some of the strange or odd experiences I've had through life, going way back to when I was just a young child, I remember when I was in middle school, I had to walk probably about 2.5 or 3 miles to get to school, and then the same thing back. Occasionally I got a ride, but a lot of times I walked. And it wasn't bad. I didn't mind it. I was in pretty good shape. It's just when it was snowing or raining, some kind of bad weather, then it kind of sucked. But the one memory I had, which at the time was just kind of neat and unique, interesting, never really thought much of it. But later in life, kind of looked back and said, yeah, that was kind of creepy. Let me explain to you what happened. when I walk back from school, I go through all these back road areas. There was some residential, like kind of a residential area, but there was also a stretch where there was a lot of space between houses. So there'd be a house with a large yard, and then the next house down wouldn't be for maybe, I don't know, 100 yards or so. So there was a lot of space between the houses, which was nice for the people that live there. They have some privacy. But I know there was one house in particular that I noticed one day there was a sign out front that said the name of the individual, said Hochstetter's Taxidermy. And I'd met the fellow before, Mr. Hochstetter. He was a friendly guy. I'd see him out by the roadway sometimes as he pulled in. And I would talk to him and say hello. And he'd say, hello there, how are you, young fellow? And nice guy. I'm guessing at the time he was probably in his late 50s, early 60s. Nice guy, he lived alone. And I noticed, you know, I thought, what is taxidermy? I thought maybe taxi, driving people around places. But I looked into it. I think I mentioned it to my mom or dad. And they said taxidermy means that he stuffs animals. And I said, stuffs animals? Like a pinata fills it up with candy? And no. They explained what he does is that people bring him a dead animal, and then he pulls the skin off it, lets it dry, and then he kind of puts styrofoam or something in the middle of it, and then wraps the skin around it, and then paints it, and puts like a glossy finish to make it look real again. So he did this with animals, anything from a field mouse up to a grizzly bear or a moose. Like he did everything, as well as fish. So I thought that was kind of neat. So the one time I came back from school, I kind of snuck by that house. I noticed that his car wasn't there. So I figured, okay, he lives alone. I'm just going to go to the back to see, because at the back of his house, he had kind of an extension with some small windows. And I could see so I snuck back there. Nobody could see me because the house was pretty far from the next one. So no one could see that I was sneaking around. So I went to the window, put my hands up against it, looked inside. And when I looked inside, I saw all of these, you know, some of the animals and fish were up on the wall on plaques or on a piece of wood. And they looked beautiful. Some of them were done and painted up and they looked like they were alive. And some of them were just the skin of the animals that was just drying and curing, I guess, before it was to paint them. And there was everything there. There were squirrels, rabbits, fox. I did see a moose head he was working on, lots of fish. And one thing I always remember was like there was a raccoon. It was kind of up on its hind legs, like it was scared of something. But in any case, I thought that was kind of neat. So going to school, I would kind of made it part of my regular routine is on the way back, because I had that long walk, just to take a break, I would stop in and kind of sneak around the back to look in the window. And I'd look in, kind of see what new things he was working on. And even when he was home and I noticed his car there, there were hedges and bushes, so I could sneak back there and no one could see me. And I would watch him at work. I could see him stripping the skin off of both mammals and fish, doing his work, painting, putting glass eyes and things. And what I noticed was, which was really, I thought, well, that's nice, because he was probably in his early 60s. And I was surprised that his parents were still alive, because I could see that his mom and dad, I'm assuming that's who it was, would be sitting there watching him at work. And both of them were just sitting side by side and just, you know, sitting there kind of leaning forward a bit, watching him, you know, kind of watching him do his thing, probably very proud. So I went there, I would imagine probably, I don't know, 15 or 20 times. And I started noticing that they were always there watching. And I had thought he lived alone. And I guess he didn't, unless maybe they came by for a visit. And every time I came, they would be sitting there watching him work and never moved, just kind of sat there, like I say, kind of leaning forward, really watching intently as to what he was doing. And you know, sometimes they'd be sitting close to him. Other times they'd be, you know, further back somewhere else sitting there. But they're all sitting side by side. It was kind of heartwarming. I thought that's so nice that the parents, his parents took an interest in what he did. And yeah, they just, it was really nice. So time went on and I kind of kept coming by and I saw him. I think he did like a, I can't remember if it was a mountain lion or it was like a large wild cat of some kind. And yeah, I watched him do that and thought, and one time he looked up and I thought he saw me, but he kind of looked out for a while. I kind of hid behind the hedge. And anyways, I kind of sat there and one time I came, it was probably 3 or 4 months later, I went there and there was suddenly a for sale sign. And I look and I go to the back and that his workshop area where he did the taxidermy was totally cleaned out. There were just, there was just some cardboard on the ground, some pails, pieces of wood, some scraps on the ground, but everything was cleaned out. And I didn't see his car in the parking, you know, in his parking spot. And I was kind of walking by the one day looking, and nobody was there. And I saw a neighbor out front. I think they were mowing their lawn. I said, do you know what's with Mr. Hochstetter? You know, it seems empty. I noticed his car hasn't been there. I said, oh, no, he packed up and moved, you know, a few days ago. He's gone. Is he moved? They're selling the house? He's, yeah. And I said, oh, yeah, so just him and his mom and dad left? And they said, oh, no, just him. And I said, well, no, were his mom and dad here visiting? And they said, no. His mom and dad died like 15 years ago. They both passed at the same time. They were in an accident. They both passed. So he's been living there alone all this time. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I saw them sitting there. And I saw them sitting in different places. Yeah, they were always leaning forward in the same position, never moving. Oh, shit.
Wow, what do you think of that, dude? Dude, he had gained them.
That's what it sounds like. He stuffed his parents.
Bro.
So I have to ask you, man, you dabbled in taxidermy back in the day. Like, does that sound like something that you could do?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because, so back before foam, most of the forms, which is what you stretch the hide on, was a lot were made from like wood wool. They would use plaster, paper mache. They would use like a chicken wire and the stuffing, like a, you're talking almost like not straw, but like it, like kind of like the wood wool and wrap and basically build your own forms. And the way you would go about getting the right size, it's much like you do today. After you take the skin off, you can measure the hide or you can measure it before it comes off. You measure what's left after the skin is removed. Like for a white-tailed deer, you measure from the end of the nose to the inside, like the lower corner of the eye. That gives you your nose measurement, right? And then a few inches behind the neck as you measure your way down to make sure you get the right sizes. He could have done the same thing with them after he skinned them and tanned them, measured their corpses, and then built forms to put his parents on.
Yeah, and then put his parents to watch him do his work.
You'd have to really like your parents to want to go through that much work.
That's creepy, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I know.
Like, I don't want my folks sitting this. Around me.
He doesn't know where he left in the middle of the night or whatever. He moved, didn't tell anybody gone. Where he was gone. Do you think that's the only two people he's got stuffed?
Absolutely not. I'm saying. Absolutely not. My thing is this. Given the year that it took place, and we know how vast other areas are, and not even just that. You have to, like, take into consideration, like, where we live. Where we live is rural compared to lots of other places, and then not rural at all compared to other places. But back in the 80s, there was no phones that you could carry with nothing. So if you got way out in the country, right, these people, you could just do whatever you wanted to do. Like, I remember growing up burning trash. Everybody burned their trash.
Yeah, right. We did. We had several burn barrels.
Yeah. You didn't realize you're not supposed to do that, right? They've made laws against all that. Nobody cared about that.
Right? I don't remember.
Like we talked about. Like, there was no rules. We're driving cars in the pasture at like 12 years old.
Well, and I remember my dad doing all the oil changes and everything. Yeah. Nobody was recycling oil.
No, where did it go? We have
on
no
the ground.
Idea.
Went on
probably.
The ground.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of these, like, so to hear this is crazy, but it's not. It's not for those that are older because, like, you remember what the world was like before it is now. And I can only imagine up in the woods of Canada, it was even more remote. Like, my thing is, did nobody know they went missing?
That's what I was wanting to know.
Right? Or they just like, yeah, they passed away and we buried them at the home place. Or we you know, they went back and all this stuff. You could just tell them whatever story you want.
Maybe he killed his parents and then stuffed them.
I don't think he did, because why would you go to all the work to do all that? Like, I think he did it out of love. Like, he loved his family and all that. But still, any of that, dude, it's just unsettling. The whole thing about it is just completely
insane. I need to see if I can get pop-up stuffed. Like, is there a way I can legally do it?
I don't.
I could sit them in studio, be like, dude, Weekend at Bernie's.
Can we get pop-up like freeze dried?
Yeah.
You know, have you ever seen, when I had first gotten into taxidermy and had, you know, some friends in it, and that's, you know, I talked to the guy that had mounted my deer. This is back in like 94, 95, right in that area. I remember them talking about freeze drying, and it's a big deal, of course, still now, but back then, to get the equipment was a massive investment to be able to freeze dry. But he had showed me a freeze dried mouse, and they had taken it. And what it was is, he, I guess another taxidermy friend of theirs had spent the initial investment, and guys would come by and pay him if they had some, which is a pretty good little gig, right? Mainly they were freeze drying pets, dogs and cats, because they would take them in, freeze dry them, and then that's it. That's just like they're stuffed. Here they are. You can give, don't let them get wet, right? But there they are. There's your freeze dried cat. Looks like it's asleep. You put it up on the pillow in the window, and then that's it. It's there forever. This creepy guy had a mouse freeze-dried standing up holding like a kernel of corn or something.
Yeah.
And what he had it freeze-dried for was to terrorize his wife, his sisters, his mom, all of that. Is he would just take it and like set it on the counter, set it in the floor where they would turn around and see this perfect mouse looking at him, the whole deal. So, yeah, the freeze-drying would be the way to go. We can get Pop freeze-dried. Yeah, and just have him hang out. If we get Pop freeze-dried, you got to dress him up like the Predator.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what we're, our Dutch. We're, he's going to wear the Dutch jacket and all that stuff as the Pop.
Dylan.
That's right.
All right, folks, let's take a break. When we get back from the break, Cam's going to be talking about Indiana.
Word?
Stay with us. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Y'all, it's another story time with Uncle Ham. I'm so glad y'all could be here. Let's just jump right into it, right? Okay. So, I don't know how I got into this whole thing. I got up early this morning, right? I got up about 5 a.m., milling around, started thinking about the game, right? We got the national championship of college football coming up, right? We got the University of Indiana versus Miami. Two teams that I guess nobody ever really saw coming into this whole deal. And it'd be great if Indiana could cap off, what do they got? It's 15-0, right? I think that's what they're up to. If they could win this, just make the whole thing, it would be a cool deal, right? So if you're an Indiana fan, Miami fan, whichever one, I'm down for either one. I just want to watch a great game, but I'm really big on the whole Indiana deal, right? So that got me to thinking. I've had some friends from Indiana. I got a really good friend lives in Australia from Indiana. So I'm like, okay, I'm looking around there. Well, then, of course, that leads into hunting, right? So I'm like, this is going to be some good hunting in Indiana. So I start looking around in this whole thing, too. And then it dawns on me. Can I find some creepy hunt stories from Indiana? Maybe I could find something like that to share with y'all. So I start digging into it. Well, then I dug into more, right, from Indiana. There's a lot of strange things take place out there. You wouldn't, I don't know, for some reason, I wouldn't think it would be too wild. But turns out, they have all kinds of stuff. Now, I've covered things in the past in Indiana, but they have a lot of UFO sightings. There are also a lot of humanoid sightings in that area. So I'm assuming because of its proximity to Illinois and the whole area that we have, this whole shadow thing started kind of making its way in. It's winged humanoids, too. I mean, of course, they're going to fly anywhere they want to go, right? So I'm going to start off with what led me into this whole thing. This is what I was telling you about. Of course, I'm always looking for creepy hunting stories. Y'all all know that. Everybody listening knows that. I love it. Listen to this. This is a rather strange one. This comes from a military base near Jefferson, Indiana. This took place November 17th back all the way back. Let's go into the Wayback Machine, wind it back to 1995. This is what it says. While deer hunting not far from a military base near Jefferson, Indiana, my hunting group, a long-standing team made up of my father, his friend, my brother, and of course myself, set out into very familiar woods which we had hunted for over a decade. Now, there had been several years without us harvesting any deer. My brother and our father's friend and I decided to one night, while my father was asleep, to go poach one. That's right. Not proud of it. My father was very strict about hunting laws, right? So one night when he was asleep, we decided, let's just go get one. So after the opening weekend, everybody else typically returned to their homes, right? But we stayed a whole week just to have all the woods to ourselves. So my dad was sound asleep. The three of us ventured down a gravel fire break, the old road, into the woods. The moonlight was pretty decent that night, and we'd only traveled about a mile in when we sat down on a large log beside a small pond. And it was then that we noticed a bright light in the sky down the road about a mile or so. Now, at this time, it looked large, like a large searchlight, similar to those used in the stories or the stores like sales promotions, where they whip around off the rooftop or out of the front. But this thing moved differently, and it was only treetop high at best. So, as this light approached us rather quickly, my brother thought I was crazy. He believed it was just a sail light, while Davy and I, my father's buddy, sensed that something was wrong. We feared it might be the police. So we were like, look, let's just head back. And after a little brief argument trying to convince my brother to leave with us, we took off at a pretty fast pace. Just as we were about to go, I looked back at my brother to urge him to hurry. And at that moment, I saw the light closing in on us rather quickly. So Davy and I broke into a full run, headed back to camp, while my brother decided to remain at the tree, shotgun in hand. I was carrying the spotlight. As we sprinted back, I glanced over my right shoulder and I saw a small, bright white ball of light next to me. This thing was probably 3 to 4 foot in diameter, a thin blue line around it, and it emitted no light of its own. See, I looked to my left to see if Davy noticed it, and I realized he was watching a similar light on his left. There's no noise at all. Now, this was fall. There's leaves all over the ground. The trees themselves are bare, but there's no sound. I observed that when the light passed in front of a tree, it magnified it significantly, and it would appear the size of, like, let's say, a cat. The ball of light was so close to me, I would say within 5 foot or less, and it matched our speed of running for about 300 yards before it decided to just disappear when we were about 100 yards from camp. Well, after we'd caught our breath, we debated on what we should do. Should we wake my dad and risk him getting completely and utterly mad, or should we go back for my brother? So we grabbed our shotguns and bigger spotlights this time and headed back into the woods. However, after walking about 50 yards, we noticed again, it's dead silent. Not even a cricket was chirping. So we shone our spotlights in every direction. While whispering, we called out, "Rodney, it's okay, come on out." We repeated this all the way back to where my brother should have been, but he's nowhere to be found. So we continued to the end of the road, calling out for Rodney the entire way back to camp, but still no response. So we tried again, this time yelling loudly, our voices echoing off the ridges. And after wandering to the end of the road and back without finding him, we were now 2 hours into this search. I hesitated to wake my dad, knowing that I'd be in big trouble. So we retraced our steps one final time, having already walked past where we had left Rodney at the tree 6 different times. So when we finally returned to camp, I knew that I had to face my father. I explained what had happened, and he told Davy to go to town and get help from the police. And just as Davy headed for the car, Rodney emerged from the woods, appearing completely unfazed. I yelled, asking, "Where have you been?" And he casually replied that he had finished his cigarette and then just walked back to camp, a trip that usually took about 30 to 45 minutes. I told him that we've been looking for you for nearly 3 hours. He thought I was joking. And when he checked his wristwatch, it said it was only 9:15. When we showed him that all three of our watches read 11:50. To this day, he insists that we're just playing a prank on him. Now, just before his death, one of the last things that we discussed that night was that night. He wanted to know if we were joking or if we had experienced something in the woods. And that was the last time we ever returned to those woods for hunting. The four of us never spoke of it for years. And my brother was never the same after that night. And to this day, I'm still too scared to go into the woods at night. There are many more details that I'm going to leave out of this story, but this is the most main part of it, and extremely unsettling, Parker. So, thank you so much for the insane story of being chased in the woods. Look, sounds like the game and fish department have some aliens working for them, right? Mr. Green Jeans sent out some orbs, keep an eye on you. That's what you get for trying to poach deer. Just don't do it. But especially missing time. 3 hours of missing time. His watch hadn't changed. He had no idea what was going on. What on earth could have happened outside of an abduction? Either he was joking and messing with them, doesn't sound like it, or the fellow was abducted in the middle of the hunting woods, sitting on a log out there, again, having a cigarette, just chilling, having a great time, that popped up. So this sent me down a spiral, right? I'm like, okay, let's see some other weird stuff that I can find in Indiana. And it did not let me down, folks. Again, we were talking about the humanoid sightings, right? We don't get them down here. We get some stories, but not a ton of humanoid sightings in Texas. They said we get a few, but they all seem to come the closer you get to Chicago. It starts seeming to pick up. It's like that's the epicenter for this, right? Listen to this one. This was a story. Lon sent this over to me as we were talking about all this stuff. This took place around Prairie Creek and Prairie Run Reservoir in Muncie, Indiana. Now, Lon had spoke to this fella named T.H., right? Back in, I believe it was 2019, he had spoke to him before all this stuff. And this had actually happened to T.H. on, I think, the day after Christmas in 2018 is when this first went down or when this all happened to him. And he goes on to say that T.H. is a military veteran, hunter, trapper, lifelong farmer who lives near to this area. And then Lon said that during our conversation, his familiarity with wildlife, aircraft, and environmental conditions was apparent. So according to TH, a huge flying object suddenly caught his attention. The creature, all right, y'all ready? The creature was flying just above the treetop level and fully visible against the fading light in the sky. So TH sees this, slams on his brakes, shakes his wife, says, "Do you see that?" Well, she's like, "Oh, what do you, you know," not paying attention, of course, what's going on. You're just riding along. The driver locks up the brakes. She's startled. She can't look up. She's trying to see, looking out around there, trying to see it. TH describes it as this. He says that this entity was a humanoid in shape with an obvious face. He says that the length of the body, if he had to, you know, estimate it, was probably approximately 6 to 7 feet. But he said it had bat wings, vast bat wings, that it was dark in color and appeared to glide smoothly at a steady speed. Now, here's the really interesting thing, and we've discussed this at length, and nobody really comes up with what's going on. This one, he observed no wing flapping. It never flapped its wings, just gliding. He said it moved silently, but it also had a purpose to the way this thing was moving before it disappeared. So later on, his wife explained that her husband was deeply affected by this, and he spoke out about it at home frequently, and that he had been trying to rationalize what he had actually seen. Now, initially, T wouldn't talk about any of this outside of his immediate family, wouldn't at all. What changed it? Whereas reports of a similar winged humanoid sighting begin circulating out of Gary, Indiana. So he starts reading these cases. And after reading these cases, he contacts his wife. He's at work. He reaches out to her and he's like, "Hey, You need to check this out. So he sends those cases to her. Well, then she's like, you need to find out where you can send this, where you, who else has got this. She encourages him to reach out to Lon. That's where he'd started finding this stuff. So he reaches out to Lon and to start explaining. So again, that's like I said before, he reaches out all this. Then on January 27th of 2019, Lon received another email from another resident in that area from a woman, Robin, and she contacted after this post about this flying humanoid near Prairie Creek. And according to her, she was sure that the creature that she had read described in this, she had personally witnessed in 2011 in the winter. She stated that she was driving on Road 1 between 400 and 500 South in Randolph County, about 10 to 15 minutes east of Prairie Creek Reservoir. And that while driving, she noticed what she thought appeared to be a human figure crouched down in the road. So she slows down and comes to a complete stop. The figure doesn't move. She says it then slowly turns its head towards her. And she describes seeing, similar to a reflective cat's eyes, a greenish-yellow glow in its eyes. She states again that the being just stared at her for a few seconds before slowly standing up in a very distinctive human manner. She said it had legs, and as it stood and turned and faced her vehicle, then without warning, stepped onto the hood of her car and used it to launch itself into the air. Just pushed off the car, took off. Robin said she watched as it lifted off like a glider. It then tucked its legs up into its body mid-flight, briefly resembling what she said would be a large bird. But what she emphasized was the wingspan. She said this wingspan was far more expansive than any animal she had ever seen. Now, at the time, she only shared the experience with her husband, and he, of course, dismissed it as a bird, but later on read the article. So out of fear of ridicule and, of course, concern for her daughter, Robin never spoke about it. She never went public about any of it. Said this whole thing, boom, secret identity, this whole deal. Even a little more recently, when I say more recently, 2001, a resident in Delaware County, Indiana, also reached out about something they had seen at the Prairie Run Reservoir. This witness described the encounter. Like I said, it's in the very last week of September in 21, was helping a friend paint a house on the east side of the county on a very hot afternoon. And while standing behind the house near the patio, Jay heard the unmistakable sound of what he described was a swooping noise usually associated with birds. And if you've been outside or anything and you've seen buzzards, I always think of buzzards, right? Because we run into them, there's, you know, plenty of where they're on the side of the road or whatnot. Well, if you've ever been out there and heard them as they take off, you hear that noise from the large wings. I'm assuming that's kind of what they're talking about, that swooping sound coming down, things like that. It was a taking off. Jay said that the creature flew directly above him, completely blocking out the sunlight in the area. Startled, took off running into the yard for a clearer view and watched this being fly over the treetops. Jay said that the wingspan extended wider than the top of the tree itself and observed. He watched it for like 20 seconds as it flew higher. Here's the crazy thing. It was flapping its wings. It's beating its wings like crazy. Lifting off before it disappeared. Goes on that it described it as gray and white. Not ever gotten one of these before, of a gray and white looking flying winged humanoid. But said, if I had to estimate, Jay said, if I had to estimate the wingspan, given the 20 seconds I had to see it, I would say tip to tip, 25 to 30 feet. Now that is wild, right? And again, according to the witness, Jay says that this thing was like the size of a van. Like the whole body was just massive. And he said that the sudden transition from light to darkness as the creature passed overhead was what was so shocking because it blotted out so much of the sunlight through such a large shadow. And that he had never seen anything like it before. So again, we go a little deeper. I'm like, okay, what do we got going on here? You start digging back into it. There was an encounter that took place in Rolling Prairie, Indiana, on the night of October 27th in 1969. Floyd Hancock described an event that happened when he was a child living on his family's property. Said at the time, Floyd lived in a trailer with his mother, father, sister, and grandmother. The trailer roof had sustained damage, leaving a large hole that was temporarily covered with a wide waterproof tarp waiting for the repairs to be made. And Floyd, at the time, was sharing a bedroom with his infant sister. So later that evening, Floyd was awoken by a very unusual noise, accompanied by what he said was a very strong and disagreeable odor. As he turned towards his sister's crib, he saw a tall, winged humanoid leaning over her. The being slowly turned its head and locked eyes with him. Now, Floyd describes this entity as extremely tall and slightly crouched, estimating a standing height between 7 and 8 feet. Its body and face covered by black hair. The wings were massive, leathery, and looked like that of a bat or gargoyle. The arms appeared to be very muscular, but oddly detached from the torso. So like the overall build was thin, skeletal, and human-like, with prominent teeth, but large arms coming off this thin skeletal body. He goes on to say that the eyes to him appeared to be very dark, no glow, and it emitted a low, garbled vocalization. So Floyd starts screaming because he knows his parents are right next door. There's no response. His grandmother was the only one to respond. She comes busting in the room, you know, like, what do they need? What do they need? Opens the door. The entity turns and looks right at her, and she just drops. She collapses in shock. At this point, the humanoid picks up Floyd, carries him into the living room, and from there ascends through the hole in the ceiling, having clearly moved the tarp aside to get in. Floyd remembers feeling cold and wet, extremely cold and extremely, like I said, freezing as he's taken upward. He recalls hearing his grandmother screaming as this thing launches into the night sky. He has no memory of how long he was gone, but the next thing he remembers is waking up in his bed surrounded by his parents and grandmother, and they're losing their mind. Now, according to Floyd, his grandmother witnessed the entire event and documented it all in real time, writing it all down. Living relatives later confirmed the details as his grandmother repeatedly recounted exactly what happened, right? What each family member was experiencing that night. Now, she passed away in 1985, and Floyd goes on to say that his parents appeared to awaken only after the abduction had ended. He believes that they were placed in some sort of hypnotic or suppressed state until the entity left with them. Several minutes later, the family heard scratching noises followed by a heavy thud on the roof. Floyd's father immediately climbed onto the roof and found Floyd lying unconscious. They brought him inside, dried him off, and put him in bed. No authorities or medical professionals were contacted due to fear and confusion surrounding the event. Floyd physically recovered, but reports of lifelong emotional and psychological trauma that he attributes directly to the abduction still haunted him, right? Look, yeah, no kidding. No kidding. He says that when the film The Mothman Prophecies was released, he suffered a severe breakdown while trying to watch it in a theater. So he had to get up and leave. And he was forced to leave. And then during the automobile crash scene, he said, I can't do any of this anymore. When Lon asked him, why did you contact me after all these years? Floyd told him, my cousin was aware of humanoid sightings there in Indiana and provided me with contact information. And he told Floyd, you need to reach out and send this. It's going to make you feel better when you realize all the other people that has seen all this stuff. So Floyd sketched what he saw, told the whole story, and reached out to Lon. And I'm glad he shared it. Floyd, thank you so much for sharing it. I have never even, I guess, thought about the fact of Mothman, like, abducting someone, taking off. But doesn't sound like he kept them. Sounded like he flew up, got a little something, and then boom, dropped them. I do like the fact, though, that they tried to do something to the parents, and it didn't faze the grandmother, right? Grandma was like, grandma's not having it. She's bringing the heat. You've got one of the grandkids. Bro, you're in a lot of trouble. You better hope grandma don't get her hands on you. Pulls off her sandal, gets that wooden spoon, just beats Mothman down with it. I'd be okay with that. Would be hilarious. But it doesn't stop there. At least this one's not. Like, flying, I guess you could say. But listen to this. In Indiana, you got to make sure you're on watch even at night. Here's an account I got sent that says, I was asleep in my bed about 4 a.m. after going to sleep late, probably around midnight. I awoke in a sleep paralysis state coupled with shooting pain in my head and neck. Now, at first, I felt like my head was in the jaws of some large animal, like a puma. Now, it goes on to say that the pain was intense across the crown of my head, the back of my neck, as if something were forcing my spine to be straight while I was being held in a device. That sounds pretty awful, right? So, P goes on to say that I broke free from the device. I think it's Paul. Broke free from the device after feeling two injections. One into my spine, which left serious pain, and the other behind my lower left ear on my neck, offset from the spine, which left me feeling drained. So I mustered enough willpower to wrench myself free from this vice grip, and I turned around to see an entity with all black skin, speckled with silver. This thing was at least 7 to 8 foot tall, but hunched over, so it was not easily really determinable how big it could have been. But I felt anger. It felt larger than me, and I felt this predatory aura of danger. Its eyes were speckled with silver swirls, reminding me of a chameleon's lidded eyes, but they conveyed the impression of swirling galaxies. The black-skinned entity had long arms and an extra joint between the wrist and the hand. The entity made a loud noise as if surprised that I had wrenched free from the vice or device that it had used on me. The sound was a deep-throated noise that was similar to the Uruk sound. It didn't seem to be telepathically communicating or anything with me. It just made this loud noise. Then, it suddenly seemed to grow hazy and vanish. Now, by this point, I was fully awake and terrified. I felt a terrible menace in my darkened house with only a faint kitchen light. I felt, or somehow knew, the entity was still here, waiting for my body to grow tired and for me to fall asleep again. I forced myself out of bed and began searching my house, flipping on lights in every room as I did so. I found my kitchen and bedroom bathroom empty. I still felt pain in my back, shoulder, and neck, and my head, and it persisted. Fueled mostly by adrenaline, I entered my sitting room and suddenly felt a spot of cold behind the couch, and all my hair stood on end. I began to check the entryway door to my house, and I suddenly heard the sound of both my back door and front door slamming loudly simultaneously. I opened the door to see if I could catch someone or something running away, but I found my front door was locked. I ran immediately to the back door, discovered the same thing. I don't know if this was due to some temporal anomaly or an ability to pass through solid matter, but I was fully awake and very terrified at this point. I went out the back door, looked up at the sky, the stars were out, and light cloud cover, with clouds racing on the wind. Only one cloud was not moving, and it had a round hole in the cloud cover. Nothing seemed to be there, but it was perfectly circular. I couldn't say how high up it was above the house, in the dark, of course, but this thing seemed to be very close. This whole encounter took place in Bloomington, Indiana on March 16th, 2016. So yet another near abduction slipping in there in their house like that, right? I'm going to leave you with this. Another one. This is in Plainfield, Indiana. The witnesses state that sometime in August of 2025, they temporarily moved from their parents' home to their sister's house on the opposite side of town. The location was a newly developed housing addition, surrounded, of course, by other homes and, of course, streetlights, right? You're like in a little subdivision. No biggie. Awesome. On a hot, clear night, the witness stayed awake, watching television, as was routine. And around 4:30 in the morning, while watching television in an upstairs bedroom, this witness said that they felt a strong and unexplainable urge to look out the window. They don't know what compelled them to do it. There was no voice, no sound, only this initial, like, indescribable urge, I need to go look out this window. Witness walks over, parts the blinds. What they see, not one, not two, but three entities walking across the street directly beneath the streetlight. The formation was unusual. Says that the tall figure was in front, shorter figure in the middle, another tall figure behind. The beings were extremely thin, with elongated limbs and heads slightly larger than those of humans. Goes on to say that the gait was abnormal. They had bent backs, dangling arms, flexed knees, heads hanging low, yet angled upward to maintain eye contact. The witness says that the most unsettling aspect occurred about the precise moment the witness looked out. All three entities stopped, turned, and stared directly at the window, as if anticipating the exact second they would be observed. They didn't walk side by side like normal people would, but instead moved in a straight single-file line. Their movements were slow, mechanical, and reminiscent of classic zombie imagery. Due to the room's lighting and glare from the streetlight, the witness could not identify color, clothing, or facial features. The entities appeared as solid, sharply defined black silhouettes rather than amorphous shadows. They continued walking and maintaining eye contact till they passed behind nearby houses and disappeared from view. Once the entities had left, the witness backed away from the window, placed their hands on their head, and verbally asked themselves, "What do I do next?" At that point, their legs suddenly failed. Unable to stand, the witness said they collapsed to the floor and had to crawl back to bed. A panic attack had set in, accompanied by a racing heart, overwhelming fear of falling asleep, driven by the belief that sleep this time might be permanent. The witness considered calling for their sister or contacting emergency services, but ultimately did neither. Focused on calming themselves, and over time, the sensation and control gradually returned to their legs. Everything, the heart rate normalized, everything was the same, and they finally fell asleep. The following day, they awoke feeling mostly normal and described the weather as unusually beautiful. 8 months later, while documenting the experience, the witness reported lingering psychological effects that were slowly diminishing, although there were no physical after effects. So there it is, y'all. Something. Some creepy entities slipping around in Indiana trying to see what they can do or who they can scare or whatever they got going on. But extremely unsettling things. That's just scratching the surface. You know, Indiana be wilding, right? It is wild out there. Look, let's take a quick break. We'll get Mr. Filson in here, see what he thinks about all the madness in Indiana, and we'll see how this works out. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. All you college football fans got it coming up. Here we go. Some more crazy Indiana stories. Like I said, I had no idea there's also a lot of UFO sightings and like strange interactions, alien interactions, and abduction stuff in Indiana. Do you think
there is?
Do you think it's because of the fields? They can see them easier. You fly over like there's a farmer because you're like out in the middle of nowhere. I thought about this when I was in Kansas. You're standing out there like when I sent you the picture of the Aurora Borealis.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're standing out in the middle of nowhere. There's only two lights for a pretty good ways.
Yeah, you're right.
Right, we're standing out in the dark. You're like, so if you're flying over it in a spacecraft, you'd be like, there's one. There's one. It'd be real easy to find them up there. So there we go. And again, too, you don't think of it as having near as many flying humanoid stories like they do in Illinois, but Indiana's got them coming over there like crazy, too.
Yeah, I've seen several.
It's wild.
In Indiana.
Yeah.
Sightings of like Mothman-like sightings.
It's like I said, it's the middle of it starts in like O'Hare Airport, and then it just disperses out as it goes of what all the madness of flying humanoids.
There was also a couple of pterodactyl sightings there, too.
There was pterodactyls up there. I did. Yeah, yeah. There was a few of those up there. Here's a sighting I got to share with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's listen. Yeah.
This is something that's pretty strange. It wasn't Lon that sent this. We got a guy named Pop sent this in. But listen to this. It says, in 2020, a friend and I were driving through a suburb in southern Maine when we were where we're both from. Every time I think of Maine, I think of ticks. Every time I think about it, right, I'm like, oh.
I think it's Stephen ticks. King.
It says, it was around 2 a.m. and we're on a residential street that's usually populated during the day, but we're on the outer edge, so we're driving through. And when from the outer edge of our headlights, I began to see feet and legs of what is revealed to be several wolves. Looks to be about 10 wolves. As we get closer, these wolves all of a sudden start to change shape. They grow taller and thinner until they're all deer, standing in the middle of the road, staring at us fearlessly as this truck comes to a stop in front of them. I decide they must have always been deer and that the light was just playing tricks on my eyes. And after that moment, the deer walk off the road. We continue driving. My friend looks over at me and says, well, that was so strange. I could have sworn that was just a pack of wolves, but I watched them transform into deer. At that point, I explained to him I saw the exact same thing. We couldn't figure out what had happened. Had no idea. And as far as I know, there are no wolves in southern Maine. And if there were, they wouldn't be hanging out in the suburbs. Does this sound like anything anyone has ever heard of the shape-changing wolves in the deer? All I can think of is not deer. Was this a not deer situation? Pop.
Maybe.
It kind of sounds like it, right?
Man, the sightings of the not deer are just crazy. And they seem to be increasing in volume. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Starting to get a lot more of them.
I think more people are paying attention.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Now, I'm not saying they're all right. Like some people that you may like, there's animals that I don't know anything about because we're not around them all the time, right?
Yeah,
like,
sure. Certainly misidentifications.
Yes. So I'm thinking the same thing is like you think it does something, but that's really what a deer does, this, that, other. But then you get stories of like the way they look, like their faces don't look right.
Right. That's one of the tips. Right?
The way they move doesn't really look like their gait is off. I always think of this now. Is when they're moving like that, is it's like pale crawlers. Are these things pale crawlers that are just trying to fit in so they don't get caught till they can get back into the woods? Because they're built lanky, they're built funky. These are the things that are in the woods calling to us, calling name. Is it just more of the scariness that comes
I think
from
of it
the woods?
Like from the movie John Carpenter's The Thing, where it's a mimic trying to mimic something else, but when you kill it and it's halfway through its transformation, you kind of see both sides of what it was and what it's becoming.
Yeah.
So maybe when they're not deer, it's something in the middle of transitioning to
something
else.
Trying to get to something. And it just grabs on that because they probably fed on deer. It's the thing that they can, closely resemble.
Trying to camouflage themselves. I don't know.
It is weird, right? It is weird.
It is
so
creepy.
It's been a little few shows back. Kyle and I discussed about how great the films were.
Yeah.
In 1986. Before we go, we're just going to drop a little bit of this knowledge on you. Kyle, do you feel the need for speed?
Yeah.
Top Gun dropped in 1986, and it was the highest grossing film of 1986 with $176 million.
I believe it.
It was followed up by the second highest grossing film of 1986, was only $2 million less, Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah. Oh, that's a classic, dude.
Folks, I'm going to lay this down. Kyle and I have been discussing it. You ever seen Platoon, folks? 1986.
Really? That was 86?
86.
It's an amazing Aliens. Movie. Aliens, yeah.
Aliens, 80, The Golden Child with Eddie Murphy, 86.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
That was 86?
86.
I thought it was older. I thought that was like 81.
Pretty in Pink.
Rip, man.
1986.
Bangers.
Bangers. Oh, yeah. My fave, Big Trouble in Little China, 1986. Yeah. Oh, and a film that was just released a few days ago in 1986, Iron Eagle with Lou Gossett Jr. Come on, man.
Yeah.
I loved the... And one of Kyle's favorites came out in January of 86, Troll.
That was 86?
That was in 1986.
Luke loved that movie as a kid.
And there's one you loved, Youngblood.
Oh, yeah.
Rob Lowe's Youngblood.
Yeah, the hockey movie. Yep. Yeah.
Now, there's a bunch I'm leaving out. These are the ones that we watched a lot of. Yeah, Pretty in Pink was up in there. What was Highlander? 1986.
The one with Sean Connery?
No. Yeah, the first one. Yeah, the very first one. Christopher Lambert, Sean Connery shows up. Yeah. 1986.
That was so cool.
Crossroads with Ralph Macchio.
Oh, that's the Robert Johnson story where he makes the deal with the devil.
Is who he has to play guitar against at the end.
Yeah.
Right? Gung Ho. Remember that one?
Yeah.
With Michael Keaton. That was a good one, too. Rad.
Crew Jones,
baby.
Yes.
Crew Jones.
It was Rad, and then Thrashing was the skateboard movie. I wonder if that was 86.
And what was the other one? One of them was Breaking 2, Electric Boogaloo. Whenever there was always breakdancing. What about Critters, bro? 1986, Critters.
Crites.
Dude, so many good ones here. Let me lay another one on you here. Let me get down here to it. I have one of Kyle's favorites, No Retreat, No Surrender, with Jean-Claude Van Damme when he could barely speak English. The Muscles from Brussels.
Yep, Thrashing. Thrashing was in 1986.
Oh, sweet. Short Circuit.
Oh,
is in
1986. Johnny Number 5.
Yeah, dude.
There's probably a whole group of people listening like,
Cobra.
What are you talking about? Oh, yeah, that's where he used to always hold the matchstick in his mouth.
Yeah, Sylvester Stallone's that we're talking about with that one, y'all. Raw Deal, one of Schwarzenegger's first movies, right?
Yeah.
Space Camp, you remember watching that as a kid?
I do remember.
That was a pretty good one. The Manhattan Project, Karate Kid Part 2, The Labyrinth.
Oh, David Bowie.
1986. Yeah, dude. Club Paradise, of course,
is
one of mine. What's
crazy is all of those movies that good all came out in the same calendar year.
And I'm leaving a bunch of them off, a bunch of them that other people would probably hear, but I'm hitting the top ones. Flight of the Navigator, 1986.
Yeah, we were just talking about that one.
Howard the Duck, One Crazy Summer, all of those. The Fly.
Oh, that's a good one.
1986, Stand By Me.
Oh, that's a classic.
Right?
That was 86,
too? Dude. 86. And I already said Crocodile Dundee. Yeah. Then you get into, remember Children of a Lesser God?
Yeah.
Dude, 86. The Color of Money.
Yeah.
Top Gun and The Color of Money. Tom Cruise dropped two bangers at the end of that bad boy, right? Some good ones. Yeah. So there's just a few bangers that were kicked out in 86. Oh, yeah. Hoosiers. Speaking of Indiana.
Hoosiers? Really?
Was in 86.
Gene Hackman. He was a great actor.
Dude, he was so great. Firewalker. The Wraith.
All of that. Man, I can't believe how many movies
Heartbreak
like that.
Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
Gunnery Sergeant Thomas Hartman. The Golden Child. Three Amigos. Little Shop of Horrors.
Are you kidding?
Those are the ones
this
that have
can't
popped
all
out.
Be in one year.
Dude, all in 1986. I don't know what was going on.
You should have just pulled up a list of bad movies. There's probably like two.
Yeah, there's literally half a dozen, and that's it. Yeah, 1986, folks. So if you're looking for some bangers or you remember growing up with them, 86 is a good year of movies. Great
Man,
year of films.
That is cool.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody has any stories they'd like to share with Cam and I and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com.
Word.
You can also call the hotline 888-393-2783.
You can call us on our cell phone.
If you want more of Expanded Perspectives, don't forget about Expanded Perspectives Elite. Just go to Patreon, search us up.
Kyle's doing a topless calendar shoot.
Yep. And you can help out your favorite show and listen to more shows. If you want to give the gift gift, just go to patreon.com/expandedperspectivesElite/gift. Let's not forget about our wonderful sponsors, Acre Gold.
I love
right
gold.
Now, you can win 3 limited edition gold bars from their ancient collection and exclusive gear. Start your subscription today by going to getacregold.com. That's getacregold.com. Cam, what's going on for the rest of your week?
I don't know right now, but I've got plans for the Elite Show you and I got to set down for. I have found some more wild stuff with ancient maps and strange new things that have come up in the last few years
of fun.
Like out of place artifacts and ancient antiquity. Okay, so yeah. All you elitists, get ready. This week's going to have some pretty wild, old-school, historical stuff on it, and I'll drag Mr. Filson into the deep water with me.
All right, I can't wait for that. Take care, everybody. I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.